welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. This is where you can find out about the best books, movies, and music for checkout, download, your
perusal.
There we go. Oh, yeah. Librarians are smart folks.
As well as things going on here in the library, like art exhibits, author talks, we in the afternoons, movies at Maine, all sorts of things going on here in the building.
I'm Brian.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Karen.
I'm Amanda.
Do you remember the year that has passed? Of course not. We'll remember for you. It's our best of the year show. Not sure what to put holds on? We'll cut through the haze with our insightful suggestions. And at the end, we'll talk about what will be tickling our fancy in the year to come. But first, what's happening at the library?
So, in the month of December, it'll be the last month for two exhibits in our art galleries here at the library. First, in the mezzanine, the courtyard gallery, on the second floor, we've got Threads of a Story, History Inspiring Art series by Charlotta Jansen, who made use of the Nashville Room's great archives and a series of paintings she did commemorating the Freedom Riders movement, mugshots of a lot of the people involved in that. Oh, let me point out that exhibit, when it closes here, it will be going on to the Smithsonian next, so pretty big deal, yeah. And then on the first floor gallery, coming to an end this month, Envisioning a Great Library, the exhibit highlighting some of the great architectural details of the building, many of which designed by Robert A.M. Stern Architects, as well as a lot of the public art that's in the building, but De Las McGraw, Adrian Outlaw, and some others. Great little insight into the way the building was put together. So check that out before it ends at the end of the month.
And if you want to see Stern, you know, you can always come to the library, but the Threads of a Story exhibit, I think, is probably one of the best art shows we've ever had at the library.
It's really beautiful stuff.
And where it's
at, a great message. I guess maybe not message is the right word, but just a great, it's inspired.
Great story.
Yeah, great story.
I just think where it's at, too, in the mezzanine is, like, you can go and look at these paintings, and then you can walk inside the Civil Rights Museum and be like, look at the real pictures of the people.
Or listen to interviews that we've conducted with the people involved in that story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just really amazing. Yeah. So it's one of those art exhibits, too. I remember when it first went up, the whole building was just like, did you see that yet? Did you see that yet? Because they were all so striking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So excellent. Don't miss it. It's the best of the year show.
That's
and the
right.
best book I read this year, probably, maybe with some caveats, The Pale King by David Foster Wallace. Probably the literary event of the year for sure. I mean, it's the posthumous work by Wallace. How could you not read it, you know? What is it about? It's about IRS auditors and their culture and the iOS processing station. Do you think that's really boring? But with Wallace's intelligence and his satirical eye and attention to detail, it was just really perfect. And I think the things that make his work really good came through in this book in a way that it hadn't in his other books. So he crafts these very beautiful, beautiful sentences, and also he brings like pathos through ultra-realism. Two, when people describe this book, it's like, oh, these lives, these IRS people, their lives are so weird. Actually, I think their lives are just really normal, like everyone's life. I think if David Foster Wallace examined your life and wrote about it in every little detail, you would be really weird. But I think really he's just has a really keen eye, and his strengths came through in this book. And it's funny, too, is like, I think his other books I didn't like. You know, I thought Infinite Jest was a failure, but this book, tragically, because it was so short that he didn't get to finish it, it's kind of the right length. The big war between the people that actually work in the IRS processing plant and the IRS auditor that comes in to correct all their corruption, it's set up, but it never actually takes place. And I think if it did take place, the book probably would have been 1,200 pages long, and you would have got the point in the first 400. So in a way, I think it probably worked that it was cut short. And I know in like Wallace's case, the material was probably gone over and edited and thought about more than any other novelist, you know, because he was so obsessive. And of course, I wouldn't have thought it was as good as it was if I didn't mention Robert Petkoff, who was the narrator. I listened to this book. I think there are some parts of the book that are clearly satirical that were just a lot more funny with his intonation. He was like, he brought it to life. There were parts that I think were art really like avant-garde, where he gets very experimental and repeats things and names and lists. If you read his work, you're probably familiar with that. But the way that Petkoff actually read those lists is really quite funny. So that's my favorite novel of the year, David Foster Wallace. If you haven't checked him out before, it's probably more accessible than some of his other work. I think it reads like short stories. They're interconnected.
Do you think that, because that's, you know, I started to read it and I only got to about 100 in and it was just too schizophrenic for me. Do you think that the audio helped tie it together better? I mean, do you think that helped with the narrative? Or?
No, I think that, you know, the if you think of the chapters as short stories and it's short stories that are related, I mean, eventually it does all come together. Who the characters are. Every character is either an IRS auditor or someone that works at the IRS processing station. Right, and that all comes through how they relate.
Mm-hmm. So I liked what I read. I couldn't keep fighting the every time you started a new version. You're like, okay, now how do they fit into the can? You know, how do they fit everywhere? Mm-hmm. And I just, after about the seventh time, I was like, okay, you're cool, but maybe later.
I think that is the way to think about it. Is like, you know, it's interrelated short stories, or even the way in contemporary short stories, there's really not an ending. You know, having a nice bow tie ending is, you know, an old fashioned way to write a short story. And then I think it works well as a narrative.
Do you think it works? Because I was going to say, like, if you're going into David Foster Wallace looking for a narrative, then you're going to be disappointed. Like,
it's really, you know, because
it's there's like character studies and examinations of ideas, maybe, but actual narrative is sometimes, or even an ending is often like just forgotten.
Well, I knew I wasn't getting an ending on this one, but, and I hadn't read other Foster Wallace, so.
But you felt like there was some sort of narrative to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he sets up the conflict, right? Yeah. The same way, like, in Infinite Jest, he sets up what's obviously going to be this big conflict between the tennis academy and the drug rehab.
Yeah.
It's obviously the auditor is coming to correct the corruption in the processing plant. And there's going to be this huge fight, and he sets up all the different personalities and how they're going to butt heads.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like, it's that wonderful... That wonderful tension, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a really good, you know, I would say maybe like a song gives you or a poem, right?
Yeah.
But it's never resolved. But that's fine with me.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are like poems, the book that I was going to talk about, Light Boxes by Shane Jones, is very much like a poem. It's a short novel. I think I read it in like 4 hours, pretty quickly. Just went through it, and it's a very beautiful little kind of avant-garde book about. Sort of a fable, fairy tale, in a land where a personified month of February has taken over and will never end. People have become oppressed by harsh winter and are trying to fight back against February, who takes various forms as an actual person who shows up, serves as sort of like a godlike figure in the sky, and then also just exists as a metaphor. It does these little sort of metafictional avant-garde things that the text changes sizes and various things like that. But it works in a way. One of the reviews I read of the book, while sort of like refreshing myself to talk about it today, was saying it's all these little tricks that have been done in the past. But I think he does it to an effect where he actually works in a narrative. There's a story there, a little fable that a lot of this old avant-gardists didn't really worry about so much. And it's just a pretty little book. It's maybe a little quirky or twee for some people's taste. If you're really turned off by Miranda July, you might not like this at all. Though it's definitely, I think, a little more substance to it than some of her stuff. But if you want to read a book that reads like a poem, it's a good place to go without actually being written in verse. So, what's up with you, Karen?
My favorite DVD of 2011 was Downton Abbey Season 1. Run, don't walk to place your hold on Downton Abbey. This is not your grandmother's masterpiece theater. Created by Julian Fellowes, writer of Gosford Park, Downton Abbey tells the story of the aristocratic Crawley family on the eve of Britain entering World War I. This sophisticated and intriguing story is as much that of the household servants as it is the Crawleys. Shot on location at Highclere Castle and various spots in England, the house, the sets, and costumes are spot on and gorgeous. Downton Abbey was voted the number one series on public television in England, and it won 6 Emmys in September. Season 2 is currently on the air in Britain and will be shown to U.S. audiences on PBS starting January 8, 2012. This series is so good, I literally salivate every time the opening theme music begins to play. Pavlov's Dog, take note. It's just that good. Amanda?
Okay. You guys seem to all, like, come to your best of 2011, like, somewhat easily, and I could not decide. Like,
yes. Can I time out? Can I time out?
You can time out.
I want Carrie to talk more about why it's good. Sell me on it.
Are there actors that we know?
Well, actually, Elizabeth McGovern is in it.
Okay.
But the costumes are so good. It's just, it's witty, it's beautiful. Oh, it's just incredible. Every time it ends, I'm like, no, it's over. And then when you watch the end of it, you're like, ah, is there more? Because they say, we're writing more, so, but you don't know how long you're going to have to wait until they actually write more. But they've been picked up for another season, so they're currently writing season 3, and they're going to have a very special Christmas episode that's going to be showing in Britain, so I'm trying to figure out how I can see it, too.
Who do you know that's over there?
Who do I know? How can I get this special episode? It's just, it's well done, it's a great story, and it's beautiful.
Is it? It's not based on anything?
It's not based on a book or anything like that. They've written a nonfiction book that's kind of like a behind the scenes, which the library has on order, but it's not based on a story.
But it's in the style of like a Victorian.
It is.
Like Jane Eyre.
If you have
Jane
seen.
Austen, I guess is what I meant.
If you've seen Gosford Park, if you liked Gosford, it's very much like that.
War One is when it's thinking.
Oh, yeah, it was around there, right?
Before.
Okay,
yeah.
So the end of that era.
It's the Edwardian era.
The end, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, there's probably a named after a monarch.
Yeah.
But it's like drama in the house. That's the plot.
Yeah. It's a drama with the people, with the Crawley family, and drama with the servants that work there. There's just a lot of stories going on, and they're all intertwined.
So you get that, like, upstairs, downstairs sort
exactly.
of thing going on.
Anyone that enjoys upstairs, downstairs will positively salivate over this.
We should have made you do
like
your
a
review in
a tofu steak.
We should have made you do your review in a British accent.
Oh, it would
I think
be very bad.
I know, but I think that would have sold it. It would have given us the aesthetic to put us there.
I'll work on that for the future.
Okay.
I just realized that it's not called Downtown Abbey. That's what I thought it was for a long time.
That's a different show.
That one's about ex-gang members who rebuild their lives.
A girl named Abby who's a break dancer.
She lives, you know, downtown.
It's a street lit book, Downtown Abbey.
It's probably checked out.
Hey. I'm cleaning up my drool.
All right.
What you got, Amanda?
Okay. So I feel like most of the good stuff that I've come across in 2011, I've already shared with everybody. So it took me a while to figure out what I should talk about. But recently, in my Freegal browsing, because I'm contractually obligated to mention Freegal in as many podcasts as possible. Not really. But I came across Adele, who I'd heard about and everybody's been talking about, and because she kind of hit it big this year. I chose to download her album 21, which is her latest release. It came out in February of this past year. It's her second album. She put out album 19, conveniently named because that's how old she was when it came out 2 years ago. I kind of first come across her songs on the TV show Glee, another favorite of mine. They had done Rolling in the Deep, which was her debut single, which went to number one. And then also Gwyneth sang Turning Tables when she was on Glee. And that's really...
Gwyneth, what do you mean?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh.
She was Holly Holiday, I think is her Glee character name.
Oh, you mean Gloop. I didn't know her.
Yes.
That's her nickname. That's what I call her.
Oh, yeah. Gloop, sorry. I'm not in on the lingo.
Gwyneth only means, like, Welsh princess to me. I don't it's like, that's a man's name, just like Meredith.
Okay, okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, he can sing the song, too. I mean, that's good.
I'm stuck in Dungeons & Dragons world, so.
So anyway, Adele the singer, her album 21 is probably my favorite new album of the year in the majority on that one. Everybody seems to love this album. And I didn't know until, you know, I was kind of working on it for this podcast that it's kind of basically... She had this major breakup with some unknown lover guy that they were pretty serious. And then these songs came out of that pain. And I kind of had gotten that feeling just listening to the songs because they're kind of, you know, she's fairly angry in some of them. And some of them are, oh, I love you, why are you gone songs. And it's interesting that she had gone into the studio for 21 before she had recorded these and was trying to do the happy, you know, yay songs that she had kind of got famous for on 19, and she didn't have it, and she had nothing, and then she had this massive breakup and this horrible depression, and put out a great album, so music really does come from pain. You can get both 19 and 21 on Freegal to download. I have not listened to 19. She's a pretty bluesy artist, although this new 21 kind of shows reflection of her time in America, so it's a little bit... She likes country music, so, you know, yay, go Nashville. And so she's just kind of expanding as an artist. So 19, 21, download them for free from Freegal. Very awesome.
My son really liked whatever the first single was off of that album.
The Rolling in the Deep.
I think that's the one. He just turned 4. And he really liked it at first, but I guess they played it on the radio
a lot.
They
overplayed it. Yeah.
And after a while, he was just like, no, I hate this, turn it off. But we did have to have some very long discussions about what it meant to have a fire in your heart and why. But it was a very abstract concept to try to explain to
him. Acid reflux. Yeah. It makes sense to me. Yeah.
Like, where's some Tums?
I'm a robot. I've never been in love. I just can't wait till she starts naming her albums 29, 29, 29 over and over again.
Well, she was going to call this one Rolling in the Deep, which, you know, that's the first signal, but she thought nobody would get it because it's kind of like her adjustment of, like, another slang British saying. So she's like, 21. Works.
I dig it. That's when you can drink. In America.
Everybody's happy. Okay, so that's what we loved in 2011. So we've also got some stuff that is tickling our fancy. And just because I'm a nerd like that, I figured it would be fun to see if we could Kevin Bacon Adele 21 to my favorite thing that's tickling my fancy right now, the TV show Leverage. So if you take Adele and her songs, Rolling in the Deep and Turning Tables, what I mentioned, were on Glee, which is a great show. So in the first season of Glee, Neil Patrick Harris starred in an episode directed by another god of mine, Joss Whedon. So Joss Whedon created a TV show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That show spun off into a TV show called Angel, which starred the actor David Boreanaz along with Christian Kane, who they were the only two actors to be in the very first episode of Angel and the very last episode of Angel. And Christian Kane also stars in Leverage, which I just mentioned. And that's a TV show on TNT. And the library just recently got these, so I've just been catching up. Like, I haven't been watching it on TV, so I've only seen the first season and half of the second season is. And the premise is there is this group of less than honest characters. They describe themselves as a hitter, a hacker, a grifter, and a thief. And then Timothy Hutton is the mastermind. And they kind of are the new modern-day Robin Hood. When rich people do things bad and get away with them, they kind of go behind the scenes and steal stuff back for them or, like, make them pay. Or what Timothy Hutton's character says is, we give you leverage. So hence the name of the show. And I will say that it's very well written, very well acted. And I think that Timothy Hutton is to me as Alec Baldwin is to Lisa. So she thinks he's really great, and I think Timothy Hutton is really great. And I haven't really seen him in other stuff before, but I think he's just really well written into that role. So I enjoy Leverage, and I think it just got picked up for a fifth season. I think that there's 3 on DVD, 4 is out now, and then they've picked up for at least one more season, so that's good. So there's plenty of Leverage to come, so feel free to enjoy.
It just reminds me of all my past relationships. You know, all the people on the team, and then they have all this leverage. I don't know.
There you go.
Works out that way.
Karen?
Oh, we're going this way. Okay. What is tickling my fancy this week is a nonfiction book called Highline. Written in an easy conversational style, Highline, the inside story of New York City's Park in the Sky by Joshua David and Robert Hammond, tells the story of two ordinary guys with no background in politics or urban design, total strangers that came up with a plan to save the Highline, an elevated rail structure on Manhattan's west side. The Highline was originally constructed in the 1930s to lift dangerous freight trains off Manhattan streets. By the 1980s, it was standing abandoned, with vegetation growing over the tracks. In 1999, the Friends of the Highline was created, and 10 years later, the space was reopened as a public park in the sky, a park that is now getting thousands of visits per month. What I liked best about this book is that it shows what a real difference people can make in their communities if they simply take a chance and try.
Jesse, did you ever see that when you lived in New York?
I never lived in New York.
I thought you lived. Did you live in New York?
I lived in New Orleans. Another new.
Oh,
New York. A lot alike too. They're very, very.
I've been to New York twice.
Where'd you go to college?
Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida.
You're going the wrong way.
New York.
No, everyone I know in the world moved to New York after they left Tallahassee.
That could be it.
There's actually like a whole little Tallahassee. In Brooklyn.
There's like little Tallahassee.
Little Tallahassee.
It's like people who didn't know each other in Tallahassee who all have come together now as exiles of Tallahassee.
Could be. Am I stalking you on social networks?
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
No, I've never lived in New York.
Oh, well, that's cool. I wanted to say that, the High Line is one of the best probably like urban reclamation projects, in modern memory. Because it was this thing that, there was this point when that was like secret New York. That, you'd be in a building and you'd look at it and you'd see this, like, green snake. Like, what the heck is that? And now it's, a park. And for now, like, you probably don't get robbed there. But maybe you do at night, I'm not sure.
I never got robbed there when I hung out there while I was living in New York.
Awesome. I love that.
Going to Florida State University.
That's a heck of a commute, too.
It was worth it for the park.
It's a super cool book. Most people would probably think it sounds boring and wouldn't want to read it, but it's half text, which is kind of written just a back and forth conversation between the two men that saved it, and the other half is just phenomenal pictures showing every step along the way. So it's really, really inspiring. It just makes you want to go, and apparently other cities are thinking about trying to do things that are similar, and there's already something that's been in Paris since I think the 1970s. But the thing here in New York is 30 feet up in the air, and so it's just kind of like a cool floating space. It's very neat.
Wow.
Very, very neat.
Speaking of really cool picture books that have come through the department lately, this is totally improvised, but that Moby Dick book?
Yes.
Who's the author?
Matt somebody?
Have you seen this yet?
I thought it was Herman Melville.
excellent. I love it. So this is great. We don't know who the artist is, but this artist...
too bad I can't find it.
Two iPads sitting in front of me.
Hey, I don't know anything.
You keep talking, I'll look.
So every page of Moby Dick, this artist, actually illustrated that page or a line from that page.
Wow.
Right? And then he put that out as an art book. And
so it doesn't have the text, it's just the pictures?
Well, sometimes...
Some of them, he did it, on the page.
Yeah, sometimes he left the actual text that you could see, sort of behind what he did on top of the page. And then others, he just totally... I mean, he actually pasted other pages from other books over top. But in the book that he released, the line... Usually it's a specific line or a specific passage, right? That actually inspired the graphics. And I think with us, we all just went crazy when we saw it.
All stared at it for 45 minutes yesterday.
Did that with Gravity's Rainbow a couple years ago. Also, they illustrated every page in Gravity's Rainbow.
Yeah, what was that guy's name?
That's more insane.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Yeah.
It probably makes more sense just looking at the pictures than actually reading the book.
We've got it here, don't we?
Matt Kish. I was right. It's Matt.
Matt Kish. I don't know who wrote the Gravity's Rainbow. And it's just something to write about on the internet.
I think we have it here.
Do we have it here?
Yeah. I think I remember it coming through.
It's called something like Every Page of Gravity's Rainbow or Illustrations for Every Page of Gravity's Rainbow. But
are they the size of a dime? And then the book would be smaller?
I just thought
that would be really a bit thick book.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So the book that's tickling my fancy now is full of pictures also to go on this theme. It's... graphic novel series by the artist Jeff Lemire called Sweet Tooth. Jeff Lemire started publishing graphic novels a couple years ago, and I've read pretty much everything that he's put out since then. I wrote a series called Essex County about a small town in rural Canada. He wrote a redo of The Invisible Man called The Nobody. But Sweet Tooth is really everything he does has come together to make this really awesome. It's sort of his masterpiece, I'd say, but it's still in progress. Where it's this post-apocalyptic world where for a while no new children were born, but then when they started being born again, they were all these animal-human hybrids, and nobody knows why it's happening. Get to a point where I won't give away where they sort of figure out where it originated, but it follows the journey of this little boy, half deer, half boy, and this man who's saved him from becoming a guinea pig for scientists who are trying to figure out why the world is the way it is. And when I first saw it, if it wasn't Jeff Lemire, I wouldn't have read it because like the whole post-apocalyptic thing, I'm kind of over. Like, I really burned out on Walking Dead. I don't really care for it anymore. That whole like surviving in the wake sort of thing, I don't care. You know, it's just sort of.
Can't the apocalypse get here already?
Yeah, really.
It's coming.
Yeah. But it comes at it at a different angle where there's like this emotional pathos that he's going for. Emotional pathos is a stupid phrase.
I said pathos earlier.
But it's the combination of emotional pathos. That's redundant.
Pathos
right?
is emotion.
Yeah. But it comes from that angle rather than some like. There's some battles and things like that, but that's not what it's about. It's about, like, this kind of scared, lost little boy with antlers and his journey. And it's really cool. And we've got there's three volumes. We've got all three of them, and they're pretty awesome.
I think I've pulled one for patrons, and now when you said small little boy with antlers, I think you just explained, like, the whole story. Like, because I've seen the picture, and I was kind of like, huh? I didn't read it, so now I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
You thought it was a biography of Jackalope.
I did.
Yeah, totally awesome. Boy with antlers. Check it out.
So, speaking about things that I wrecked that, didn't I? I was going to say.
You know, boys with antlers.
Yes, that's my autobiography. I grew up in the country. And when I was growing up in the country, like, my sort of teenage obsession was the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung. And finally, after years and years, Carl Jung's Red Book has finally been published. Now, we don't have this at the library, so you will have to interlibrary loan it, but it will come very fast because local academic libraries have it. And Carl Jung wrote all these really influential psychological theories. His theories are still the basis of, like, the Myers-Briggs personality test. Or, if you're an MPL staff member, the Which Bird Are You game.
I was an eagle.
Yeah, exactly. And all of the sort of mythological comparison that's in Joseph Campbell, it's basically a reskinned Carl Jung. But Carl Jung, for a while, basically made an illuminated manuscript of his dreams and self-induced hypnagogic states. So just all his dreams, he illustrated them himself, and then he also transcribed conversations he had with these dream beings. Even though through the years, he's kind of known more for his sort of, like, spiritual insight than, say, like, psychiatric insight. This is sort of the one book that had no academic pretense whatsoever. It was his big mystical, like, self-indulgent thing. And if you were into Carl Jung, it was like, we have to read this, and it was locked away. And then finally, it was a few years ago, it was actually published, you know, with full-color reproductions of all the paintings, and then also all of the things he actually wrote about all the beings that he talked to in his dreams. Of course, is this a religious artifact? Is he crazy? Is it a nutbag artifact? Is it outsider art? You know, what is it? I just think it's amazing. So far, I've only looked at the pictures. It's really massive art book.
It's huge.
Yeah, I haven't actually read the text yet, but obviously some of it is kind of nuts, so I don't know if you want to read the whole text, but considering that he actually, like, hand-painted the text, like it was an illuminated manuscript, I don't think if you just read the typed-out text, I don't think it's that long, but it is this huge, beautiful art book. If you like looking at illuminated manuscripts, I recommend it. If you like looking at mandalas or dream art or outsider art, go for it. The Red Book by Carl Jung. And it's funny as it came out a few years ago, and I tried to interlibrary loan it right away, even though I knew there was the 6-month interlibrary loan rule that you can interlibrary loan a book. Yeah. And of course, it was cost prohibitive to buy it, so I just waited, and now I finally got it. And of course, I always want to make things easy, you know? I mean, maybe you don't want to wait, you know, 4 days for the most awesome book that's published in the last 50 years. That's cool. You know, but another book that's extremely similar is The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick, which was just published that the library owns. And this is, like, such a long, along the similar lines, I had to mention this. But so in 1973, 1974, Philip Dick has a variety of religious experiences where he feels or psychotic experiences, where he feels like he's given knowledge that other people don't have. So he has these mystical experiences, and those become the basis for all his novels since then. And the people who were, like, really into Philip K. Dick knew that he had wrote all these nonfiction pieces trying to explain this experience and what it really was and what it really meant. And so he called it his exegesis, and it's, like, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. And finally, this has been published in a somewhat abbreviated form. about 800 pages, edited by Jonathan Lethem, novelist that I've talked about on
the podcast. He's like the Philip K. Dick disciple, right?
He's probably the most famous of the Philip K. Dick disciples. Him and Richard Linklater. And he actually, some of the stuff that's in the exegesis, Linklater talks about in that film Waking Life, where he's like, Philip K. Dick said that time is actually frozen in like Jerusalem in the year 4. It's all that stuff. So, no, there's no pictures. It's just text. But if you're a Philip K. Dick fan, if you like reading about contemporary religious insights, if you think all the saints and the mystics have died, right? Philip K. Dick's exegesis. If you're a Philip K. Dick fan, you have it anyway, right? So the Red Book by Carl Jung and the exegesis by Philip K. Dick.
Well, we're talking about Carl Jung. I recommend the book came out about his love life not too long ago called Jungle Fever.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
His title. It's not real. I just made it up.
But you know what? You know what is coming out? It's somebody we're going to have to break up. But
the Jung and the Restless?
Yes. There's a book about his love life. It's not a book, a movie about his love life starring Keira Knightley as one of his many mistresses, right? Who's playing Carl Jung?
Fassbender and Viggo Mortensen are. I'm not sure who plays who.
And it's actually David Cronenberg.
Yeah, it's really? A Dangerous Method is the name of the movie.
Yeah. And guess what the method is, guys? I know. So that is coming. So funny. You made that joke, and it's like, no, that movie's coming out.
Can we rate David Cronenberg and suggest my title for him? I think it's better than Dangerous Method.
I'd go see the first one. I don't know. Dangerous Method sounds boring.
I could sit here all day and come up with Carl Jung puns.
Jungisms.
He would say they come from your unconscious.
Probably.
You've been listening to the Popmatic Podcast. For more information, you can go to
library.nashville.org.
I think if you don't say www in old versions of Internet Explorer, it won't work.
Well, those aren't our target audience anyway. If you're not using Chrome or Firefox 15 that hasn't even been released yet.
It's true that if you're not, you probably aren't listening to a podcast. I mean, that's painfully true.
Or you're using IE4 saying, why is my computer talking to me?
Why is it so slow? Why do I have pop-ups?
cut all of that.
Yeah, I don't think that helped us.
Who's it? www.library.nashville.org. And then we can leave out the explanation about adding the www.